Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 54 of Nerd Pride Radio. 54, the number of squares on a Rubik's Cube. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones, and I am a Pathfinder nerd. A Pathfinder nerd. Let's start off with that one, because earlier this week, my 10-year-old was very happily babbling on about our latest Pathfinder game and said something about himself being a Pathfinder nerd, and I realized, that's right. You know what? I need to make that clarification here in the credits, because by God, I don't play D&D anymore. You guys know that. I play Pathfinder, and I know Pathfinder, D&D 3.5, really very similar, almost the same system, right? But Pathfinder is so much better. So, that's where my correction is coming in. But maybe we'll talk about more of that later. My name is Mike Jones. I am a Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like 7 other kinds of nerd that I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. As always, you are listening to the right in the middle of the credits. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right, Nerd Pride Radio smells just like fresh-squeezed crunchberry juice. Oh. And before we get into the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast, let me start right off with, Mike was wrong! That's right, it is time for yet another installment in our all-too-frequent segment, Mike was wrong! A couple episodes ago, I did the whole bit on racism and sexism and evil within Pathfinder. And I quoted extensively from, well, not quoted, but referred extensively to the article, on the Feminist Bee's blog. And, I immediately made the assumption, because it was a swarm of feminist bees, I immediately made the assumption as I was doing that segment that the person who was writing that blog was female. And just opened up by saying, hey, the woman who wrote this blog, and then went on to discuss and referred to the person as a she all the way through. The person has joined our boards, at least, you know, to make a little bit of commentary on that particular episode. And I have no conclusive proof, but I'm just saying from the email address that I can see and a quick Google search, yeah, I don't think Feminist Beast is female. I think Feminist Beast is male. Which is not relevant. I mean, the point that he or she is making in the blog and the points that I brought over to discuss and ponder about on this podcast, the author's gender is irrelevant to that. But and the fact, simple fact that he or she did not point that out to me at any point means it wasn't relevant to them either. So, what it does show to me is, man. I still need to do a lot of work on myself. The idea that I just immediately jumped to that conclusion. I mean, like, didn't even think otherwise. Like the assumption there, was just so obvious to me that I didn't even think about the other possibility. I didn't even think that this might be someone who is male or otherwise gendered. Didn't even occur to me. And so therefore, my apologies to feminist bees. If he or she is offended by any of that, and just a cautionary tale to me to be a little bit more careful in the future. I think that's it for that segment. Yeah, that's probably enough, which means I can go straight into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. You know what? Nerd Pride Radio is a podcast in two pieces. The first half, just for me. The second half, just for you. And this first half, the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week, you know what? If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and the best stuff gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into my master list. First thing on here,
Oppenheimer!
A little bit of meta talk. This is just where I pull back the curtain a little bit, talk about my podcast, my website, things that are going on. The first thing to talk about is Twitter. You know what? Ronster asked me if I had a Twitter account for Nerd Pride Radio, and I didn't. I've been intimidated by it. I've just never gone to sign up for one. You know what? I signed up for Facebook when everyone said I had to sign up for Facebook, and I hate Facebook. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. I never update that thing. I never update my personal account. I never update my Nerd Pride Radio account. I'm really bad with Facebook. I hate it. But Twitter, I go sign up for it. Turns out, I kind of like it. I mean, it's only been a few days. Lord knows. Don't, you know, hold me to anything. It could be a week from now. I'm finally going to decide, you know what? This is a waste of my time. And then I'll walk away from it like I do other social media. But for now, at least, we have a Nerd Pride Radio Twitter account at Nerd Pride Radio. So it's that simple. So if you're on Twitter, look it up, follow me, and hopefully I'll keep doing updates and stuff. So we'll see. But also on my meta talk, and this one's more important, is my summer schedule. You guys know me. I've been doing this for 3 years, and every year it gets to the summer, and I have the absolute best of intentions. I really do. Every year I say, this year I'm going to be different. This year I am going to keep producing quality content as much as my podcast can be considered quality content. I will produce that quality content all summer long. I will keep going. And then, I have never, ever put out a podcast during the summer. It just has not happened. Come April or May, gets towards the end of school. I trail off, I run out of time, and then I do not podcast at all, at least until the following August, September, and this time it took me even longer. It took me up towards the Christmas season. Was it this year? Did I wait until the new year to start podcasting again? Yeah, I'm bad about this. So I'm not going to make any promises. Today is officially the last day of school for my kids and my wife. All right, so this is it. This is the last possible day. And in fact, my kids are due to be home from school in about an hour. So this podcast is really, this recording right now, episode 54, is a race for me to see if I can get this done before they get here. Because then once the summer comes, I got a kid home from college. I got three other sons. So there's six people who live in this house. It is not a huge house. We spend a lot of time together as a family. So we get busy. It's hard to find a quiet time to sit down and record for an hour. People have suggested to me that, well, why don't you just do some shorter episodes? Or why don't you break up the schedule and just put out a podcast every 2 or 3 weeks? Or why don't you, I don't know. But I did, you know, a couple months ago, started up doing the fingertips, the short bonus episodes. I put out like six of those. And those are super easy to record. I mean, I can sit down and record one in 10, 15 minutes. And literally within 30 minutes of that, I can have the thing posted up and ready for you guys to listen to. So maybe I'll do some of that. I don't know. Again, I'm going into this summer with the best of intentions. And I'm planning on doing some podcasting stuff over the summer. I don't know if it's going to be full episodes. I don't know if it's just going to be fingertips episodes that come out every once in a while when I feel like it. But for all I know, this may be the last you hear of me until September. And I'm just not going to apologize for it because this is just the way my schedule goes, and I'm not going to make any promises, but I'll do my best. We'll see what happens, all right? Enough of that. That's depressing me. Better than that, we need to get back to my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
I got Kitty Pride and Nightcrawler 2. Wait in there for me. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. All right. Role-playing games, video games, card games. If it fits on my gaming table, I am here to share it with you. And what am I going to talk about this week? Well, I'm probably going to talk about Pathfinder again because I love my Pathfinder. I keep playing it and I keep enjoying it. We actually did not have an online gaming session this week because Stan's game, The Cost of Magic, wrapped up and was wonderfully successful, and everybody had a great time. And then this week I was going to start in with some zombie cinema, which is not Pathfinder. But I love zombie cinema, and I've actually got all the graphics I need. I've got all the information lined up. I actually can post this stuff up and get it going, and I should do that shortly. But I was just not ready to play a game. I am so tired. Last week of school, things going on, just couldn't make it. So, zombie cinema will probably wait a month, and then we'll try it again and see if it goes on. But we did level up in Darks' game. So my half-orc bard is now third level. I'm super excited. I think I talked about this last week. Super excited. We're going to be playing that next Thursday. Can't wait. You know I'll keep you updated. But as I'm looking at characters, this is what I was going to talk about Pathfinder this week. I was looking at character optimization. Right? There's something about me that, like a lot of you, when it comes to role-playing games and characters, especially in a really rules-heavy system like D&D or Pathfinder or something like this, I like doing the optimizations. I like seeing, not necessarily that I want to play this particular character, but if I were to min-max it, what's the maximum number of hit points I can have as a first-level character? For example, it's probably like a dwarf barbarian with like 23 or 25 hit points or whatever. Something like that. Just working out what's the best I can be at whatever given task it's going to be. So for example, the other day I was designing, I just want to see how much damage I could do. And so I started comparing, if I'm going to be a barbarian, I'm better off, with two weapon fighting, am I better off with, your typical greatsword, or, is it better to go with the falchion? So even though you're not doing as much damage, you wind up doing more critical hits. And then I got focused on critical hits. I'm like, oh, how much can I do without having to actually rely on a magic item like a Vorpal weapon or something that works on critical hits? Or what? Nah, it's not Vorpal, is it? Whichever one does the improved critical hits. What's the best I can do for critical hits and damage? And I was coming up with, a barbarian that by, 12th level or whatever, or it was a combination barbarian fighter. But anyway, he winds up doing this ridiculous amount of damage. He's getting multiple hits per round, and, he's taking, four shots around, five shots around, and one out of every three of them is going to wind up being a critical hit, and it's going to wind up being massive damage, and it was fun. It was really fascinating for me. And so, as I'm looking around, I wound up finding, the Grapplemancer. Alright, this is a D&D 3.5 character. D&D 3.5 is D&D is a little bit broken compared to Pathfinder when it comes to some of this min-maxing stuff. But did you know that in D&D 3.5, just using standard rules, you don't even have to go to third-party rules, just using stuff that's published by Wizard of the Coast, you can create a first-level wizard character who has a grapple score of plus 26. Now, maybe you don't play D&D. Maybe you aren't familiar with role-playing games. Let me just tell you, plus 26 is phenomenally high. Holy crap. And just, it's just by straight up rules manipulation that, okay, well, look, if you go with, cause normally you would do a barbarian or a fighter who's your big grappler, or a monk. Monks are really good at that. And you could have a first level character who's, coming off with a plus 6 or a plus 8. Maybe even plus 10 if you're really good at working these things around. But this guy comes up with a wizard who, I take a wizard, I put all these extra points into strength, I wind up being, have an octopus as my familiar, which gives a grappling bonus. I wind up taking feats directly related to this, and using just the D&D rules, you can have a plus 26. Holy crap. Now, what part of that was an item, I think, like some kind of psionic tattoo. So let's go more reasonably at like plus 22. All right. Plus, something huge. Now, it requires him casting all of his spells to get this going. But still, the idea that he can do that, that he gets into combat and can immediately just latch onto somebody, they have no chance of escape. And now he's got a spell that covers him with acidic skin, and he's just dissolving them as he holds onto them. Holy crap. All right. But all that stuff, there's lots of min-maxing and optimization websites out there. You can find this stuff online all over the place. What it got me to thinking about was, okay, well, where do I do this myself? Have I ever actually played one of these characters? And I realize I'm doing it right now. It's not doing, you know, again, it's Pathfinder. You can't go as extreme in Pathfinder. But I'm still playing my current character, Dothan, my half-orc bard. I want her to be the best at what she does. All right, there's just something just to see how high I can get that bonus going. And so it's the kind of thing that now she's third-level character, and she's running, like, for her perform skill. When she sings, when she's playing her violin, plus 14, which is a phenomenal number. That is a huge number for any skill bonus. I mean, that's just her standard walk around. She doesn't have to cast extra spells. She doesn't need a magic item for it. That's just her standard number is plus 14 for her perform skills, which, now again, if you're going to min-max, if you're going to get out there and really go extreme on an ability, yeah, being able to sing really, really well is maybe not the most combat effective. Because, yeah, she can use her singing in combat, but it doesn't rely on her actually rolling the dice for it. It's just a given. But there's something about that. I want her to be the best at what she does. All right. And my ultimate goal here, well, actually, I have some other ultimate goals that I'm not giving away yet. But my intent with her is I want her to be the best. And so when it comes around to 10th level, 11th level, I'm doing the numbers in my head, and if things keep progressing in the same direction they're going, she takes the same kind of focuses. I mean, she's kind of spreading out into some other combat stuff right now, but if she keeps on to this focus, by like level 10 or 11, just looking at the numbers, she'll have a plus 24 to her singing skill, which means that when she sings, even on her absolute worst day, her absolute worst possible role, she still winds up singing the most beautiful, heartbreaking song you've ever heard in your life. That's amazing to me. That's the kind of thing that again, combat useful? Not real often. But as a role-playing device, I don't know, it's building towards something. I really, really like it. Maybe it sounds stupid, jumping. The ability to jump, leap really, really well in Pathfinder or D&D has always been this weird fixation of mine. I have designed any number of character builds that focus on getting a really high acrobatic skill, or if you're in D&D, a really high jump skill, getting the extra movement, which gives you a bonus on your acrobatics when you go to jump, getting the boots of striding and leaping, which give you yet more bonuses, so that the idea that you can have, you know, say a third level character or a fourth level character who has the ability to jump, you know, literally from a standing jump, can take off and go like 12, 15 feet in the air, just straight up, all right? That they can do long jumps of 40 or 50 feet. For some reason, that just fascinates me. And I've built this a number of different ways. I've done it with rogues and fighters and monks. I had one who was a half-orc pirate that I actually played for a very short time who had this ability. And his use for it was since he was a pirate, on board the ship, it was a matter of one of his combat tactics would be immediately to leap up into the riggings, get up above whoever his opponent is, and then dive down on them with his blades. I mean, and it was just cool. It was something that I thought would look really badass in the game, so that's what I did. And again, I focus on jumping because I think there's something super cool about it, and yet it's the kind of thing that, in general, you know, by fifth level, you've got characters that can levitate and fly. It's not even, you know, jumping suddenly becomes really, really irrelevant. It's kind of a moot point when you've got the wizard and the sorcerer who can just fly whenever because they've got spells for it or magic items for it or whatever. Then jumping is, you know, it's been superseded at that point. And yet, for some reason, I still love it. I don't know why. That was the other point I was going to make about optimization. I don't know what it is, but for some reason, as I'm playing this little optimization game with myself, when I'm building a character where I'm trying to optimize physical skills, like the jumping or the critical hits or the, when you're just looking at strength-based stuff, doing fighter stuff, I don't have any problem with characters using things like the boots of striding and leaping or using, you know, a magic weapon to augment their skill, or if you're going to be a fighter, if you can get a hold of the Girdle of Giant Strength or the Ogre Gloves or whatever to give yourself strength boosts, I don't have any problem with that. You know, augmenting your strength, your constitution, your dexterity, your physical skills with magic items or spells or whatever, yeah, Totally cool. That makes perfect sense to me. But for some reason, as I'm building Dothan, my bard, you know, when I'm looking at her skills here, the especially the performance skills, the singing and the music that I'm focusing on with her, well, you know what? Having a buff for her charisma would help out here. Having, you know, the headband of whatever it is, it's the equivalent of Eagle Splendor. It's a headband that can give you up, you know, +4, +6 to your charisma. Having the spells that give you the bonus to your charisma. For some reason, those feel like cheating to me. I just feel like it's the kind of thing that, yeah, it's not really her though. You know? Does that make any sense? And again, from a game point, it's all mechanics. It's all just numbers. There shouldn't be any reason that I should be steering away from that. But God, if I was a wizard, you know, getting yourself the headband of intellect to give yourself the +6 intelligence would give you all sorts of great bonuses that, you know, it would make your spells tougher for people to resist. It would give you more bonus spells each day, so you would be able to cast more. You would be able to, your research would go faster. There's all sorts of great reasons to get yourself that headband of intellect. And yet, as a player, getting inside the head of that character and trying to roleplay them, I would feel like a fraud. I would feel like the idea that, you know, here I am, Gunter from Futurama, that, yeah, it's only because of the hat that I can actually get into college and look down on all of you other snooty people. But the minute somebody knocks my hat off, I'm back to being a monkey. It just feels cheap. It feels like cheating. I can't. So, I don't know. Why? Is it because I know it is. I identify your mental characteristics more with your actual self, and the physical characteristics seem less important to who you really are. Although, I mean, again, you know, if I get myself the Girdle of Giant Strength, if I have you cast a bull strength on me, or I drink a potion for it before I go into combat and it buffs up my strength, is that, you know, any different from a real world athlete, you know, juicing up on steroids? Which seems really fake. And look at how much we look down on, you know, Lance Armstrong or whoever else for doing that. In real life, yeah, that's not really them. And thus their achievements seem cheapened by it. And yet, but on the other hand, I guess, you know, we don't knock Iron Man for putting on his armor to, I mean, that's his magic item, right? To augment his strength and his speed and give him the ability to fly and make him invulnerable. And, you know, and he gets it all because he's wearing, this suit of techno armor that does all this for him. I don't look down on Tony Stark for that. I mean, I don't know. I guess anyway, it was weird. It was just stuff that's been rolling around in my head all week. As usual, I don't really have much of a point. I just like talking about stuff. So let's move on. Roll down the sheet and, oh, I'm so excited about this one.
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That's right, it's my science corner. And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. This is a letter that I got from my wonderful brother, Kyle. And, he writes and says, I want to send Miley Cyrus into orbit, but for a physics thought experiment, I want to see if I can do it purely by mechanical means. In other words, without combustion or ignition of rocket fuel and the sort. Is this possible? If it is it possible to do it and have her survive? Whether or not it's possible, can you please make the title of this episode, Miley Cyrus Gets High, and then see if it increases your downloads. All right, yeah. First off, I'm really excited about this idea. Second off, yeah, I get it. I when I talked about naming episode 52 Racism, Sexism, and Evil as opposed to Feline Defenestration, and I did it simply for consideration of downloads, well, here's my brother to the rescue to help me by giving me an actual topic that I can discuss about on the podcast, and the topic comes with a built-in attention-getting headline that actually relates to what I'm talking about, and it's funny in its own right. So, having fulfilled all this, let's get right down to it. Can we put Miley Cyrus into orbit using purely mechanical means? And absolutely we can. We railgun her into space. That's all it takes. Dude, railgun is easy. I mean, obviously, you know, we could build ourselves a space elevator, but we don't quite have the technology for that. You know, or we could do slingshot, I suppose. But when it comes to something like that, the whole idea of the springs and the stored energy in a device, I don't think we can get enough stored energy, to get somebody, anybody, much less Miley Cyrus, into orbit. But railgun, magnetic railgun, we are all over this. This we can do. All right. And, if we don't really care about her survival, we can actually do it relatively cheap and get her up into space really quick. And of course, you know, whatever container we put her in, she'll be pretty well liquefied when she gets up there because the G forces would be unreal. But I did find that if we wanted to build a railgun, magnetic railgun to put something in orbit, all right, which is different than sending someone just out into space in general. If we wanted to just put them into orbit, first off, you don't launch straight up to put something in orbit. The easiest way to do that would be to launch them at an angle, because they need the angle, because they're eventually, you know, yes, you need a lot of lift, but also they also need the lateral movement because they're making an orbit. They're going to be going around the Earth. And to get Miley Cyrus into orbit, we would need, if we wanted her to live, we would need to build a magnetic railgun that is 100 miles long. Now, that seems like a lot. I'll grant you that. All right? But 100 miles long, and we'd basically, you'd start it, probably start it underground somewhere, but get this railgun, getting it, you know, accelerate, and then the last, you know, few miles of it, go uphill, and we just angle it up a mountain. All right? And then shoot from the top of the mountain, boom. We've got our angle, we've got our speed, off she goes into space. All right, perfect. We can get her up to 11 kilometers a second or whatever we need. We can do this. Now, I think really the only barrier we have at this moment to doing this is figuring out how to handle the friction, handle the heat that would be generated off whatever capsule or pod we're using to send, assuming we put her in any kind of capsule or pod and we don't just fling her out into space. But other than that, I personally think that in the time it takes us to build a 100 mile long railgun, I think that will be the time and the impetus that we need to solve the other technical issues that go along with it. I think all of this is perfectly manageable. This is not, it's something that we can do right now with the technology we have today. Just needs a little bit of hard work, a little bit of time and money, and a little bit of problem solving and innovation along the way, but it's nothing that we can't do, all right? I literally think we could have Miley Cyrus in orbit in 10 years. This, I think, is totally achievable. Now, once again, as I say, 100 miles for a railgun, a 100-mile launch pad, basically? Are you out of your mind? But think about it. Think about it. 150 years ago in this country, during the 19th century, railroad was becoming possible, all right? By the year 1870, we had like 45,000 miles of rail laid down in this country, all right? In the 30 years that ended that century, so from 1870 to 1900, in 30 years' time, we laid down literally 170,000 miles of railroad track. Now, granted, rail is a little less complicated than, say, rail gun. But this is not like this isn't doable. Do you know how big the Large Hadron Collider is? The LHC is 27 miles around. That's a quarter of the way already. You think the rail gun is going to be that much more complex or expensive than the parts going into the LHC? No, and they already have proposals for one that's 80 kilometers long, which is, you know, some number of miles if you convert from metric, right? All right. So we're already planning to do yet another larger collider that's like 50 miles around. So, you know, 100 miles for our railgun is not unreasonable. This is absolutely something we can do. And if we're talking about an investment in space, building one or two or five of these things is actually not just doable, not just reasonable, but cost effective. Do you know how much it takes to put something into orbit right now? On average, costs can vary wildly, but on average, the average launch into orbit, on this planet is $25 per kilogram. That seems like a lot of money. Because I'm pretty sure, again, I'm not good with the metrics, but I'm pretty sure I weigh at least something like 30 or 40 kilograms, right? So, I mean, just what's 260 pounds? That's like 300 kilograms. I don't know my metrics. But that's expensive. Man, that is really expensive. All right, so do you know what the estimated cost is to send something into orbit if you use a railgun? $3 per kilogram. $3. So instead of a $20 million launch to get stuff up to the International Space Station, we're talking about like a $500,000 launch. Holy crap. Dude, it doesn't matter. You know what? If our railgun is going to take us, let's say it takes us $10 billion, all right, which is slightly more than we paid for the Large Hadron Collider. Well, we didn't. Slightly more than Europe paid for the Large Hadron Collider. All right, let's say it costs us $10 billion to build this railgun. All right, that's still cost-effective. All right, that's still going to save us money down the road, especially when we've now got that technology perfected and we can build another one for cheaper because we know how to do it now. We've worked out all those glitches. We've figured stuff out. This is really, really, really a good idea. I wish we were doing this. And Miley Cyrus could be our pioneer. She would be the one to do it. You've motivated me. So, it just needs to be done. That's all I'm saying. Did I have anything else about that? No. Just that, yeah, dude, we can totally do that. Totally worth our time. Let's see. Oh. Science fiction double feature.
Science fiction double feature.
That's right. Here at Nerd Pride Radio, you get not one, but two movie reviews for the same low price. I don't even know why I call them reviews anymore. I'm not even really going to review these movies because one of them I just saw and one of them I have not seen yet. But what I'm looking at is Amazing Spider-Man 2, which I just saw, and X-Men Days of Future Past, which I'm really, really looking forward to but haven't seen because I don't think it's out yet. But here's the deal. Amazing Spider-Man 2, all right, here's the quick review. Yeah, it was all right. I mean, it was decent. The special effects, stunning, absolutely top-notch, all right? And I also thought that I didn't think that the story was too confusing. People whined and bitched because, oh, there's too many villains again. Oh, there's, okay. Look, this was a movie about Electro. This was a movie all about Electro, and it was really good for that. And, okay, they introduced Goblin at the end, a little bit. But then at the very tail end, the other villain that comes in is not even entering in a villain for this movie. It's entering in villains for the sequel, for what's coming next, or for the spin-off movie of the Sinister Six, or whatever the hell there is that they're doing. All right. So I didn't think that was the big issue. The big issue is, you know what? The story's just, I've seen it before. I mean, honestly, Peter Parker has to balance being Spider-Man against wanting to have a life for himself. And ultimately he's got to break up with his girlfriend because, well, he doesn't want to put her in danger. And then he's going to realize later that love, you know what? If you've seen Spider-Man 3, you already know the plot of Amazing Spider-Man 2. This is not like it's any kind of surprise for you. So I'm not even giving you a spoiler warning. It was just kind of so-so. I mean, worth watching for the special effects. I had a great time with all of that. And I liked the sense of humor in it. I think the quips, the smart talk, I think this is more of the Spider-Man I'm used to from the comics, much better than that emo guy from the first series of Spider-Man movies. So I enjoyed it. All right, I had a good time. It wasn't perfect, but I enjoyed it. Here's the part that just got under my skin. All right, I had just finished explaining to my kids how you can't have Spider-Man pair up with the Avengers in a movie. It just can't happen. You can't have Spider-Man pair up with the X-Men. You can't have the X-Men show up in an Avengers movie or vice versa. Why? Because they're all owned by different movie studios. I just finished explaining all of this to my kids. And then what happens at the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2? Do you know? Have you seen it? Because if you went and saw it, you know enough to sit through the credits on any Marvel movie. You know that. All right, so I sit all the way through the credits. And oh my God, here it is. Here's the hidden scene. This is what I've been waiting for. And what is it? It's X-Men. It It's Mystique. It's Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique heading up some mission for I don't know what. And it's a badass clip. I'll give it that. But it made me a liar. Here, I just told my kids that you're not going to see X-Men and Spider-Man, or vice versa. And so I'm trying to reconcile this. I'm like, okay, so what the hell does this clip have to do with Spider-Man? Why am I getting excited about this clip? Why does Spider-Man end and then we see this? Where does it tie into Spider-Man? And then it got to the end of the clip and it didn't tie into Spider-Man. No connection whatsoever. No, it was just a trailer for the next movie. That's all. Not even next movie, because the next Spider-Man movie will be some piece of crap that comes out in 2 or 3 years. But it was a trailer for the X-Men movie, and that's it. A trailer for it that just happens to be inserted in the middle of Spider-Man's credits. Why would they do that? All right, and I found out. Turns out, Spider-Man is owned by Sony, and Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man needed, Sony needed Mark Webb to direct Amazing Spider-Man 2. Because apparently he directed the first Amazing Spider-Man, and now they wanted him back for the sequel, I'm guessing. So they needed Mark Webb. But unfortunately, Mark Webb was under contract to Fox. All right? And so they begged Fox, and they tried to work out a deal, and Fox finally said, you know what, you can have him for your movie, we'll let him out of this contract, but only on the condition that you insert an X-Men trailer as your post-credits scene in Amazing Spider-Man 2. Really? Oh, and it was crap. I mean, okay, the trailer was cool. It was good. I liked seeing it. I liked seeing the X-Men in action. I love Jennifer Lawrence. That was great. But it wasn't a post-credits scene. It was just a trailer for another movie. And trailers for other movies don't belong in the credits of this movie. The whole point of those post-credit scenes, the whole point of them, all the way through all the Avengers and Avengers-connected movies, was that they're giving you hints as to what's coming next. They're showing you what the next big thing is, and there's always some reveal that you go, oh my god, they're gonna do that? And you're thrilled. It's wonderful. Alright, this had no connection to Spider-Man at all. There was no emotion there for me in the least. It was really just plain old advertising. Oh, which makes me wish that Disney would just shell out enough money to just buy all these properties back. Whatever it takes, just get them back. But The problem is that why would they bother? That would take a huge amount of cash to get these properties back. I mean, more cash than they want to deal out because, I mean, yeah, even though Sony owns the rights to Spider-Man, and even though Fox is still going to sit on X-Men forever and Fantastic Four, God, they're going to keep ruining Fantastic Four. Even though they're owned by other companies, so it's other companies making movies that are potentially good, potentially bad, doesn't make any difference. Marvel, Disney, still gets a cut. They still make money. All right, so even when Fantastic Four or Rise of the Silver Surfer completely tanks, is a complete critical failure, Marvel's still getting a cut of that money. They're still making cash off of this, and they didn't have to do anything other than sit there and rake in the dough. Does it matter to Disney that Fantastic Four is just being ruined by this? No, because we got lots of other properties that we can work with. We have got so much superhero material here. We don't need to have Fantastic Four back for decades. We don't care. So what does it take? Well, you know what it takes? It takes them not making a movie for 10 years or not making a profitable movie. I actually think there's a dollar amount, that there's a minimum that the movie has to make at least X amount at the box office to be considered an actual successful movie. And if it doesn't make at least that amount of money, then after 10 years, the rights revert back to Marvel, Disney. And so that's what happened to Daredevil. Yeah, remember that crappy Ben Affleck thing? Yeah, well, it's been more than 10 years for that. So Marvel and Disney have Daredevil back. They own Daredevil again. And Elektra was in 2005. So in 2015, they get Elektra back too. Punisher, they've already gotten Punisher back. Which to me, after the string of dismal, horrible Punisher films we've seen over the years, it's really been 10 years since they've done something decent with Punisher. Or done anything with Punisher? It's been that long, but apparently it has, because they got Punisher back. So, at this point, I mean, really, it's just, I don't know. I wish they'd let Fantastic Four go, because I would rather see no Fantastic Four movies than to see them keep cranking out really, really stupid Hollywood blockbusters just so that they can make their cash back and keep their license. That's killing me. I mean, at least with X-Men and Spider-Man, I can see Spider-Man, by the way. I always pronounce him as if he's Jewish. At least with Spider-Man, yeah, they're making enough money and they're making decent films. I mean, look, the first X-Men movie, decent. X-Men 2, really good. X-Men 3, all right. Kind of crap. Wolverine, crap. All right. But then, whoa, the last, X-Men First Class was awesome. Days of Future Past, I'm expecting really good things out of this one. So at least they're making good movies, even if we can't cross them over. In fact, I think the closest we're going to get to a crossover is, X-Men means that Fox owns everything mutant related in the Marvel Universe, basically. All right. So what happens with Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver? Oh, well, you know what? Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver are both mutants. They're both closely tied to Magneto, closely tied to the X-Men in general or the various X titles. And so therefore, they're going to make an appearance in Days of Future Past. But Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver also are both Avengers, and they're both closely tied to Avengers. And so how does this work out? Well, it turns out they're going to be in both movies, but they won't be the same characters. They'll be the same characters, just with the same names. But the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver who appear in the Avengers will not be able to use the word mutant, nor will they be able to mention Magneto at all. They'll just be super-powered people from, I don't know how they're going to explain their origin, who are connected to the Avengers. I have no idea how they're going to work that. Whereas the Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch that show up in the X-Men movie, they can certainly be Magneto's children, and I'm sure they will be, but there will be no connection to to Avengers, no mention of them. The Avengers don't exist in the X-Men world. That's just how it goes. And I think I heard that one of the movies will be able to use their superhero names and the other movie won't, which I thought was absolutely bizarre, but I don't know which one was which, and I can't even remember where I read that, so don't quote me on that one. But anyway, I don't know. I mean, yeah, do we hate the fact that Disney has been gobbling up all of our favorite properties over the years? Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, they're doing good things with them, but it's still kind of scary. But Jesus, I wish all the Marvel properties could at least just be in one place, whether it's Disney or somebody else. If they're going to make quality movies and they can put them all in one place and they can work them all together, that would make me so much happier. But it's not about what I want. It really isn't, which is kind of a shame. Hey, look, guys. Hey, look, we're running long. So you know what? There's no time for my nerd rage. So that nerd rage about history that I mentioned last week that I was going to do this week, well, now I'll do it next time, which, you know, again, maybe September for all you guys know, but we'll see how it works out. So instead of that, we're going to skip straight ahead to the Pod-O-Matic! Sweet sassy molassy. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble. He rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Well, you send your question or topic to me by email or, better yet, in a private message on our forums. I'll add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Oh, thank goodness. And, here's the deal. You guys remember a few weeks ago when I thought R2 had failed because I went to go click and he didn't do anything. And I found out that it's because he has an on-off switch. Well, ever since then, I've been kind of panicking about what am I going to do if R2 dies on me? I mean, honestly, I've got R2 here and I've got him all tricked out and I've got the extra dice inserted in there. I mean, I peeled it away from the game board and cracked everything open. And this is a beautiful, beautiful little Pod-O-Matic bubble with my own percentile dice in there. And what happens if he dies? Well, turns out this game is still for sale. I had no idea. I would have thought this thing was like 10 years old. It may, for that matter, it may be 10 years old, but apparently I can still buy it on Amazon for like $25. It's the Pop-O-Matic R2-D2 is in trouble. That's the name of the version of Trouble that it is. See, it's funny because he's in the Trouble bubble, so R2-D2 is in Trouble. You got, yeah? Cool, right? So for $25, I could have a replacement R2 if I needed to. I just hope it never comes to that because I love my R2. He's been through a lot with me. So anyway, having said all that, Zimnipot, Ronster is giving you a run for your money. He is not up to 120 whatever yet, but Ron has been crazy go nuts on the Potomatic entries this week. I think he's up to 65, which means I threw away the charts I did for calculating probabilities on this. But at 65, that means, yeah, we're going to hear from Ronster this week and next week and the week after for quite a while. So welcome to the Ron and Zimney Show. Let's see what our first number is. It is a 72. And 72 is, in fact, from Ronster. Good job, dude. Ron says, what are your top 10 favorite podcasts to listen to? All right, I've already covered this once, but let's go through them quick. My favorite podcast is my own, Nerd Pride Radio. I listen to every episode at least once, and that sounds a little egocentric of me, a little conceited, and it probably is, but I love listening to my own podcast. I love hearing what I talked about before. I love being able to go through and pick stuff out. And sometimes, you know, like I tried to listen to episode 52, where I keep referring to feminist bees as a woman, and it just makes me cringe. I can't listen to that one. But for the most part, most of my episodes, I like hearing the old stuff because it inspires me to go, oh, that's right. You know what? I never did go follow up on that. Or you know what I should talk about now? And it inspires me to write new material and jot down new stuff onto my master list and come up with new things. So I love listening to me. So Nerd Pride Radio is number one. And then after that one, well, hold on. Oh, I don't have the darn thing out. Hardcore History by Dan Carlin is absolutely number two. And that thing at, you know, 3 hours or 5 hours, I don't care how long that thing is, when it comes out, that is the first thing I will listen to above all else. And then the Bugle podcast with John Oliver and Andy Saltzman. I love the Bugle. I like listening to Common Sense by Dan Carlin. I don't know if it's actually number four, but it's within the top 10 for sure. I still like Harmontown. I know I bitched about Harmontown last week, but I've settled into a nice rhythm with it. And it turns out that he got a little bit better. He's still kind of self-absorbed and there's still some episodes where I have to start skipping forward, but it's like, you know, one in three episodes that I just, I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to go on about philosophy for an hour. All right, let's just skip ahead to the good parts. But when he has guests on, when he has like Mitch Hurwitz, the creator showrunner for Arrested Development, that guy is awesome. I love listening to Mitch Hurwitz on the show. So Harmontown, I'm still listening to Harmontown. I actually got to the point now where just this morning, I've now got all of the episodes up to the most current one downloaded onto my Kindle. Which means that it'll be just a few days and I'll have all of them finished off and I'll be current on Harmontown. I'm still really enjoying it. Like I say, there's some annoying pieces to it and I got to kind of pick and choose a little bit, but I really like it. The Daily Knowledge podcast from Today I Found Out, literally every single day there is a podcast from these guys that is anywhere from 2 to 10 minutes long. And it's just a fun fact for the day. It's what I wish I could do with my fingertips episodes, but I can never be that concise. I always go into a fingertips thinking, it's going to be like 2-3 minutes. And then I talk for 20 because it's just how I go on about stuff. I ramble like this one. I just said I'd go through these podcasts quickly and there is nothing quick about this at all. Okay, that's 6 of them. Let me keep going. I know I'm going to miss a bunch. Doesn't make any difference. I love listening to the Top 5 podcast. I love listening to Film Sack. I enjoy the Comedy Film Nerds. And Fofop with Will Anderson. I love Fofop. And, oh, crap. That's 10, but I have to take out the Comedy Film Nerds because I forgot about Walking the Room. Walking the Room would be in there. Comedy Film Nerds gets bumped to number 11. But even still, that's 10 off the top of my head. I'm sure if I go look at my Kindle or my iPod or just open up iTunes here, I'm sure I will see that there's like 6 of them I missed that I'm going to struggle to figure out where to rate them. Doesn't make any difference. There's a thread somewhere in the first 2 pages on the forums. If you go to Nerd Talk, there's a thread in the first couple of pages there where it just says podcasts, and I list them all off with links and descriptions and everything. Go look it up. You'll like it. Number 78 is from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, if I had a partner and we were having a baby, what would you name it? And then there's a part two to this question. But what would I name your baby, Billy Bob? I would not name him Billy Bob Jr., although BBJ would be a great name for a baby, wouldn't it? I know. El Grapidoro. Save that. No, I would not use El Grapidoro on a baby. If I was going to name a baby, it depends on if it's a boy or a girl, obviously. But right now, I don't know. Go to the baby name generator. Go to the baby name wizard. That's the one I'm looking for. Go to the baby name wizard and just start browsing around there and you'll be just stunned. Stunned. Apparently, look, if you live here in Nebraska with me, I think your top choices for this year, are Emily and Mason. So if you want to be very Nebraskan, that would be, which not, you know, Emily's popular all around the country. But, or, you know, hey, how much do you like Frozen? You can go with Elsa. I mean, Elsa's a great name. It's new. It's, and I'll guarantee you, within the next year or two, Elsa is going to be one of the top baby names out there. Cause it's got that old style that, like, you know, Emily did this, or Olivia, or Sophie is coming back in. It's got that, it feels like an old name to people, but old enough that you don't actually know a bunch of old people running around with that name. It just feels classic. And Elsa, I think, is going to be right up there. I think Elsa is going to fit right in with all the new baby names. But part two of your question is, how about if I'm just getting a dog? All right, if you're getting a dog, seriously, El Grapidoro. Name your dog El Grapidoro. And then if you just want to call him Doro for short, maybe a good, original, unique name for your dog, and you'll know in your heart of hearts, always, when you look at him, you'll see a Mexican masked wrestler named El Grapidoro. Number 48 from Kyle, my brother, says, I heard they're remaking Krull. Is there any way this could be a good movie? Oh, that is a great question, Kyle. Well, hold on. Let me ask RoboCop. RoboCop, what do you think? Ooh, no. He says no. Hold on. I have Conan the Barbarian here. We'll ask him. Huh? No? Okay, he says no. All right. Oh, wait. Conan just changed clothes, and now he's Quaid from Total Recall. Quaid, what do you think? Really? Yeah, he says no. It's going to suck ass. That is number 61. It's Ron again. Hey, Ronster says, what are your top 10? What is with the top 10s? You're killing me here, man. I can't think that fast. What are your top 10 favorite apps for iPhone or Android? Okay, I have Droid phones myself, and I don't have any favorite apps. I really don't. I have played a few stupid games. I wouldn't call those favorites. They're just stupid games. And, I mean, look, my flashlight, I love being able to hit the light button and just turn on my flash and have a working flashlight in the dark. That's awesome. Actually having a level on my phone has been helpful a few times. So level, sure. A barcode reader. The barcode reader, when we do inventory, everything we've got is barcoded. So having a barcode reader on my phone is very handy. But you know what? That's just a handful of really useful apps. I don't do a lot because I don't have my own smartphone. I only have my work smartphone, which, you know, I can use, but I don't like using it for personal stuff. I'm not gonna be loading a bunch of gaming material on it and that kind of stuff. As much as I would love to, it's not gonna happen. So this one really, not quite applicable to me. Not yet. Ah! Number 69, dude. This is from Kyle. Kyle says, if Red Hulk and She-Hulk had a baby, would it be black? Well, I don't believe so. My gut instinct tells me it would be either red or green. Certainly whatever color it was would wind up being some sort of bright standard color, like one of the main six off of your color wheel, and it would be bright. All right, fully saturated. It would, because that's how you draw a Hulk character. You don't draw a Hulk character in black. You don't draw a Hulk character in muted colors or pastels. You use bright, solid primary style colors. All right, and so I'm going to say that their baby would be now. Wait, Red Hulk is still Banner, isn't it? I mean, is Red Hulk's not anybody different? So this is still cousins, right? They're still cousins, so this is still pretty wrong. Not that there isn't precedent for this within the comics, because there is. Still wrong. But, you know what? I'm gonna go with, if Red Hulk and She-Hulk had a baby, if you took the red and the green, I would bet the baby would be a vivid yellow. Or yellowish. Right in that area. It would be a vivid yellow. It's something that takes up the other edge of the color wheel. I mean, well, red and green are fairly opposite. So it would either be yellow or purple if you want to go. And Purple Hulk is just grotesque for a baby. I would go with a bright yellow. I think that would be cooler. But anyway, that's my guess. Number 74. Again from Kyle. Kyle's actually dominating. Sorry, Ron. Sorry, Zim. But Kyle seems to have this episode so far. What is the last alcoholic drink that you had? And then part B, when's the last time you drank a beer? My last alcoholic drink would have been a whiskey and coke at some social fun. No. I had a shot of whiskey the other night. Just a shot. Just one. Because I've always got whiskey in the cabinet and I don't drink it very often. But I do know that drinking in moderation, like one drink or two drinks every day or so, is actually really good for your heart. All right. So I always tell myself that, you know what? One shot of whiskey right before I go to bed, just for my heart health, is probably a good idea. And so, so this was maybe 2 weeks ago. I went in and I took a shot of whiskey and I was going to start this regimen of just a shot a night I don't know. It burns. It seems like too much trouble. I don't enjoy drinking that much. It's been a while. Last time I drank a beer, I cannot remember the last time I drank a beer. I'm going to guess it was 4 years ago at the Alamo Draft House in Austin, Texas. We went to see, I can't remember what movie we were watching, but, oh no, I know. We saw Wolverine. We saw the first Wolverine movie, so that was either 4 years ago or 5 years ago. I don't remember when Wolverine came out. God, was it longer ago than that? And I had a bucket of Kirin, so I had 5 Kirins that night, which I love Kirin. Oh my God, that's good beer. I don't like any beer. I really don't. But if I'm going to drink beer, I like Kirin. Kirin is not just the best tasting of beers, in my opinion, but Kirin comes with fond memories. So that's probably the last time I remember drinking a beer. There may have been one in between then and now, but if so, I can't remember it. Number 53. Holy crap, it's Kyle again! Oh, Kyle says, when you want to train and hone your ninja-like reflexes, is it a good idea to ask a close friend to just randomly punch you as hard as they can once a day? Now, let me note that normally this would be a question that's followed by, because you've asked me a yes or no question, and normally you would follow a yes or a no question with why or why not. But you didn't. You said, is this a good idea, and then followed it with, why not? You're just assuming my answer is going to be no. The answer is no. And the why not? Because, dude, you're going to get hurt. You're going to have them punch you as hard as they can. Yeah, great. That's a great motivator. That will certainly help you put you on edge and help you develop an awareness of your surroundings and keep you constantly on guard for lurking danger. You'll develop your spidey sense, as it were. However, you're going to get hurt. That's really bad for you. Like if they punch you as hard as they can, you could potentially break something. You could potentially rupture something. I'm an old dude. I can't put up with that kind of physical punishment. You would think it would be better if Can they just jump out and scare you? Or better yet, can they come out and maybe tap you with the stun baton on a really low setting so you get a shock that isn't going to hurt you? It's not going to do any permanent damage. Although, well, I don't know. My weak heart, you never know. This just sounds like a bad idea all the way around, man. And I think you knew that when you wrote the question. That's why you phrased it that way. So, yeah, it's just not, I don't want anyone punching me. That seems dumb. Is this from something? I'm vaguely thinking, is this like, what was the stupid Seth Rogen movie? The other green. Green Arrow, not Green Lantern. Green Hornet. Is this from that? I'm just vaguely, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I never saw the Green Hornet. Oh, thank God. Number 70, from Ronster. Have you ever seen a speedometer watch? No, I have not seen a speedometer watch. What is it? I'm going to assume it works like my speedometer GPS app for the phones. Is it the same sort of thing where it basically just measures your speed based on GPS positioning? Hold on, let me look. Okay, yeah, I looked, and it's dorky. And not that I have a problem with fancy digital watches or anything like this, although on Amazon I can buy speedometer watches for $6. So it's not even like they're fancy or expensive. These are apparently cheap and easy to produce. That's the guinea pig, by the way. I'm not going to go shut them up because we're almost to the end of this, aren't we? The speedometer watch, my problem with it is these are functions that you can have on your smartphone. And the idea that I'm going to wear a watch for something that my smartphone will do for me, it's just not going to happen. I mean, that's why I don't wear a watch at all, because my smartphone or any phone I own tells time. I don't need a watch when I have a phone. I always have the time available to me. Hell, half the day my eyes are glued to a computer screen and the time is right there in the corner. I can't get away from it. And so to have a watch that does this for me when I could just have my phone on, I mean, I suppose for easy reference, while you're running and you just pull your watch up and see that, why, yes, I am running at 6 miles an hour. I suppose so. Although the speedometer watches I'm looking at, their speed dial looks like a car's dashboard dial, which means that it's going from 0 to like 140 or 200 or whatever it is. So the dial is not helpful to me when I'm running. It's maybe helpful to me when I'm biking. If I'm the kind of guy who's going to get up over 20 miles an hour on my bike, maybe. But really, I mean, this speedometer watch, the way it's designed, the dials I'm looking at, this is for a guy who wants to be able to check his speed on his speedometer watch while he's in a car. Really? Is that what it's for? Or while you're on the plane, I suppose, watch that sucker go through the roof. I don't know. It seems a little weird to me. There's one that was billed as an all, you know, it has your exercise data in general. So it's, you know, it's got the pedometer in it to pick up your paces. It's got the pulse thing in it to check your heart rate. It's got, okay, that could be useful. I could certainly see that one. But just a speedometer watch in general, I don't know. It seems a little pointless to me. I once had speedometer installed on my smartphone just for fun because it seemed cool. But, well, what's it good for? You know what? If I'm anywhere where I'm going fast, I have a speedometer in front of me. They're built right into the vehicle. It just seems, I don't know, it just seems a little pointless. Sweet. Number 4. Hey, it's Zimny Pot. I love Zimny. Zimny says, what groceries are best when you're building an army of food zombies? Oh, this has got to be the best question of the week. If I'm building an army of food zombies, what groceries do I need to buy for that? Boy, that is tough. I'm going to stay away from breads in general, breads, cookies, crackers, because A, they're, you know, they're either soft and mushy or they're hard and brittle, and either way, really vulnerable to water. I think, if I'm going to build food zombies, I need meat. I think meat has the right, strength and resilience. The idea that, yeah, meat's going to be able to move around for you. It's going to be able to take some blows. I mean, that's why our bodies are made of meat, right? I guess if there were good metal groceries, then maybe, you know, building a tin man, a metal golem, would work better for me, but I mean, we're going to go straight up Meat Boy Frankenstein here, I think. I mean, and they're not going to be huge because I'm not buying sides of beef at my local grocer. I'm going to wind up buying, you know, some pot roasts to make torsos out of, and then I'll get some steaks and whatnot to create some decent arms and legs and maybe some extra padding on this thing. And my meat zombies will be pretty sturdy. I think the meat portions of it, I think will do really, really well. But they'll also be tiny. I mean, like literally, I'm going to be building, little meat zombie golems that are only like a foot and a half tall. But imagine an army of tiny steak people, undead steak people charging at you. I think that would be pretty impressive. I think it's a great question, Sam. Sweet, number 28. Ooh, it's Zimny again making up for lost time. Zimny says, you've just bought a yellow hovercraft. And if I were to buy a hovercraft, it would be yellow. I think that's beautiful. Perfect. And it's named Bessie. I wouldn't have named it Bessie, but that's okay. Yellow hovercraft named Bessie. Bessie name comes with it. That's fine. And you fancy taking her for a ride. You know what? That is what I fancy. Where are you going to go? Well, everywhere. I am going to take, I've got a hovercraft. I'm going to go show off my hovercraft. I don't even care where I go at this point. I'm going to take it up to work with me. Got to go out and see my in-laws, which the in-laws will be fun because they live out in the country. We can go flying over some fields and stuff because that's what a hovercraft is good for, right? We fly over some fields and then, then I need to take it to a lake somewhere. I don't live near enough to any other bodies of water, but I've got lakes around here. I need to take it to a lake somewhere just so I can cut across the lake, just to show people that I can do that. That would be awesome. I don't need to go any specific location. I've got a hovercraft. I'm out joyriding. What does the hovercraft run on? I assume it's some sort of hybrid, right? It's got gas and electric. Is that, we would do that, wouldn't we? That's fine. That's fine. How far can I go on a tank of gas, in my hovercraft? I'm going to assume 1,000 miles, right? Yeah, that sounds reasonable. So yeah, I'm just going to tool that thing around all night. I'm just going to go everywhere. I know where I'm going with my hovercraft. I'm taking it to the drive-in. Oh, what better way to pull into the drive-in than in a hovercraft? How retro future do you feel at that point? That would be so cool. Oh, and I think the drive-in this weekend, hold on, let me go look up what the drive-in's playing. Give me a second. Oh, okay. If I go in the month of May, I can take my hovercraft down to the Starlight Drive-In, and they are playing Amazing Spider-Man 2, followed by the Lego Movie. That would be a fun time. I'm telling you. I mean, Amazing Spider-Man 2 wasn't great, but it was good. I enjoyed it. And the Lego Movie, I loved. I could have a great time watching those. Or, all right, then after that, they get Heaven is for Real, coupled with the Amazing Spider-Man 2. No thanks. But then after that, okay, Rio 2, which I'm imagining Rio 2 sucks. All right, I'm pretty sure it does. But it'll entertain the kids, and going to the drive-in is just a fun experience no matter what, especially if you're in a hovercraft. So we could watch Rio 2 followed by X-Men Days of Future Past, which I haven't seen yet. That would be spectacular. I think I have to wait till the middle of June for that one. But, you know, I'm going to Texas. We'll wait till I come back from Texas, and we'll go see, take our hovercraft down there and watch those two. I think that's actually a really good idea. Maybe, you know what? Even if you can't deliver on the hovercraft, Zim, I think I'm still going to go watch those movies when they come out in June. This sounds great. I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you. Thank you, Zim. I wouldn't have remembered that if it hadn't been for you. This is number 77. Ronster. Ron says, favorite car color? Green. Dark green. But you know what? I can be persuaded on anything. I've seen some really nice cars in a dark mustard. That's really cool. I've seen metallic orange. I mean, orange was the color of the General Lee. Orange was the color of my college roommate's crappy piece of junk, that he adored. Orange is the color of an old beat up crappy car. But now lately they've had these new metallic oranges. And I say lately, it's been the last 5 years, I think. They've been really, really cool. So, yeah, I'm not going to be too picky about anything. I say the dark green because that was the color of my Escort. I loved my Escort. And it was, yeah, granted, It's a Ford Escort, and it's not, you know, it was a four-door. Not a great car. It was tiny on the inside. I mean, for a four-door car, there's not a whole lot of room on the inside. But it had great gas mileage, and it ran forever. I owned that thing for 14 years, and I loved that car. I drove it into the ground, literally drove it until it was so ugly and falling apart so badly that my wife finally said, you're buying a new car. You have to get rid of that, and you have to buy a new car. I cannot bear you being seen driving that thing around anymore. All right. And she had good reason for that. And so I finally, after 14 years, I finally gave the thing up, but I still will see Escorts around. And even though my new car, I drive a Taurus now, but my new car is so much nicer. It has so much more room. It has a smoother ride. It's not falling apart at every corner. It's a much better car. It's a much better experience all the way around. And yet, I see an Escort drive by me, especially a dark green Escort like the one I had, and it breaks my heart. It's like, I wish I had that car again. Oh man, do I miss that. So, you know, that's me. I loved that car. But, you know, things change, things happen. Last one today, number 59. This is from Ronster again. Man, you made good this episode, dude. What kind of kill ratio do you have for your role-playing characters? I don't know. Not much of one. That's when you're talking about me as a character in a pen and paper role-playing game. Is that what we're talking about? Me personally, I don't do a lot of killing because I'm a bard. I sing. I do support work. I do diplomacy. I greased the battlefield, although I did grease the battlefield and dump a dude down an 80-foot pit to be swallowed up by some mega shark octopus thing. I have no idea what it was down there. So I guess I was directly responsible for one death of a goblin. But in general, I don't kill a lot, so my kill ratio is pretty darn low. In all of the games I've played, which is not many, again, slaughter and death has never been a huge part of it for me. It's always been the role-playing aspect. If you want to talk about the people who play in the games I run, my kids especially lately, their kill ratio, I would say about 50%. I mean, with things that they actually wind up fighting with, I would say about half of them they kill, and half of them either run away or they let go after the battle. They let them live for whatever reason. But yep. Yeah, Probably about 50-50 is a good guess. So, well, that was kind of a short, quick way to end that. I would like to end on a big high note, but we didn't get a big high note. We just got I don't know, 50-50. Whatever, either way. All right, but that's how we're going to stop. And we're going to throw it over to Gladys for a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
Oh, crap. I think my kids are home. Hold on. Wait. Yeah, they are. Dogs are barking. Kids are coming in. Oh, God, I'm caught. Hi, guys.
You said I could be in the next episode.
Yeah, well, it didn't happen. Look, can you guys just wait?
I should be in the next episode.
Let's not have this argument. We'll yell at him later. Let's go.
It's recording right now, guys. Can you guys just give me...
I never knew!
Can you guys give me 2 minutes to finish?
No.
Please? I'm kicking them out. They're going, I promise. All right. Ready? This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music Woo! This week was Weezer's In the Garage, She Blinded Me with Science, as performed by William Shatner, and Two Turntables and a Microphone by Beck. All of these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them, love them. I wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them myself. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write me a nice review, or check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop at the Facebook page, click like. It is 9 seconds out of your busy, busy day. You can do that for a buddy. Or now I also have Twitter. Check me out at Nerd Pride Radio on Twitter. Follow me. Love me. I'll follow you back, maybe, if I think of it. We'll see how it gets. I'm not really good at this whole Twitter thing, but I'm working on it. Don't forget to check out all the free games I have available on my free games page. I've got Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all awesome, all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com or apparently now at nerdprideradio on Twitter. I promise I will actually respond to you, but to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up, you send me a message, we'll hang out together, we'll have fun. That's my favorite. That's number 20. Oh, this one's from Eliahad. We haven't heard from Eliahad this week. Eliahad says, rank Pathfinder's core classes from 1 to 10 based on awesomeness. Go. All right, core classes. Let's see. My least favorite is the monk. So we'll throw the monk all the way down at the bottom. Number one, clearly the bard. I love bards. I can't help it. Bards are the single most awesome by far. Then after bard, it's going to be, let's do bard, ranger, sorcerer, rogue. Yeah. And then, after that, we'll go, fighter. I like fighters. I like the customizability. Is that even a word? I like that. Shut up. I like the customizability of the freedom of fighters to really, work in all sorts of different feats and tacts. And it's a lot of fun for me. So that makes fighter. And then I'll go, druid, I think, is awesome. Badass awesome. But I also, I don't know. Druids just feel overpowered to me. So I'm going to bump them down and put clerics first, then druids, then the paladins, and then the wizards. I know wizards, phenomenal godlike powers. I get it, but I don't like the spell books. I would rather be a sorcerer. I know it makes you more limited, but I like the flexibility and feel of a sorcerer better. So I put wizard all the way down at place number 9, which leaves monks at number 10. So, in order again, where was barbarian in there? Did I skip one? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Oh, there's 11 total. Oh, barbarian should have been up there right after ranger. I mean, really, it should be bard, ranger, barbarian, sorcerer, rogue, yeah, fighter. Yeah, and then, cleric, druid, paladin, wizard, monk. There you go. That's 11 in order.